Welcome to the Grow Your Business podcast. Listen in as we discuss all things business, growth, and marketing with business owners, thought leaders, and entrepreneurs. And now, here's your host, founder of Roundhouse, the creative agency, Saul Edmonds.
Oh, hey, everyone. Welcome to the Grow Your Business podcast. Desiree is here today. Desiree, how are you? It's great to have you on the podcast.
Oh my God, I'm so excited to be here. I couldn't be more happy at the end of my busy Monday to be here.
That's fantastic. It actually genuinely always really makes my day, especially considering that I'm talking, I end up sort of speaking with people who I've met for the first time. And it's always, there's something really special about it when you get on a podcast with someone first time and you have these really interesting conversations. It's awesome. So thank you. And thank you for being here on the podcast too, for taking the time out of your day. I just, for everyone listening, I always ask because I like it and it's a visual. Whereabouts are you in the world? Where are you speaking from?
Yeah, I am in Austin, Texas in the U.S. in a beautiful day. It's 92 degrees Fahrenheit here today for all my East Coast people that are suffering now in like 30 degree weather soon. It's 92 degrees here today. So it's a boating day here in Texas.
Yeah. So is it usually like pretty hot all year round there?
Yeah, we get a winter. I'm doing air quotes, a winter, yeah. Because it lasts like maybe 3 weeks and we're all right. Like, oh my gosh, it's so freezing for 3 weeks. And then it goes right back to being like spring weather. That's great.
That actually sounds eerily like Brisbane, because I'm in Brisbane, Queensland, and it's pretty warm, like pretty nice weather, but it's actually quite what we say. It's quite similar. We're like, oh, it's so cold. And all the people down south always think it's ridiculous. You know, people say, like, what are you talking about? Like, cold, never up in Queensland.
You know, your blood gets thinner when you live in these, you know, heated climates. So when the winter comes, it's like, wow, you know. So
yeah.
I don't want to hear it.
Yeah, I'm the same. They should rethink how they approach that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so we're going to be talking about a bunch of cool stuff today. But before we get into the, the main sort of substance of it, for me and for everyone listening who doesn't already know what you do, how you do it, like your general, and then I guess like a little short intro about how you kind of got to this point. Like the short version, and then we can expand on it. Could you explain that to everyone, please, Desiree?
Yeah. So I actually have a full time job and a business, which is it's interesting in its own right. I work for a company called ZRG Partners that does global talent. I'm the director of marketing and culture for them. And then I have my own business called Do Better Consulting, where we work with individuals on inclusion, inclusive leadership training. And I do a lot of speaking engagements about this topic. I got into this way. I have a very non-linear path in my career. Let me just say that. But I got into this because every industry that I went into, this needed to be a focus in those industries. There was a very inauthentic or non-inclusive environment that I was working in. And since I know this is audio only, I'm a Black female. And so for me, it was always hard for me to climb the ladder. It was always hard for me to feel included. And I suddenly, as I got into leadership roles, started to take this as kind of my side mission. So it was always my side job to my regular job. And that has continued throughout what I consider a leadership career in the last 20 years. I've always made it a point to bring this to the table at any organization that I'm at. And then, you know, about three or four years ago, I decided to do this in a consulting way because I found that I wasn't doing talent at the time. And I decided that, you know, organizations really didn't know how to do this and they didn't understand it. And I started it right after what happened in the U.S. and the George Floyd murder happened. And it was this huge point in United States for us to start taking some of this stuff seriously. And it brought a lot of people to me to say, Desiree, can you help me? And I, you know, sure, I can help you along with that 50-week job I had, but I decided that it needed to be an actual business. And so I've had this business for 3 or 4 years, and I continue to do this work on the sidelines of a regular job.
Is the whole everything that you've been speaking about there before you started that, like as to take like a step back then also, because because of, you know, our own story and you know how when you're in business and you sometimes or you know, often, depending on what you're doing, often reflect on like how you got here, when like you're talking with other people, and especially when you end up talking with a lot of other businesses and they're like, you know, sort of explain the story. I'm always then especially interested about, like, before at this point, you're so used to doing all this now. When you say, like, even if you take a step back to, you know, when you were doing whatever studies or before then, is this sort of, the interest in maybe not even this area, but like in related areas, was that always something you were generally interested in, or have you been able to reflect on that and go, oh, there was a point where I woke up one day and went, oh, wow, Desiree, I really want to do this particular thing? Or was it much more of a slow burn? Was there some kind of like light bulb moment, or was it much more gradual?
I had some light bulb moments throughout my career. I went to school for international business and marketing. And I thought I was on a path that I had designed for years. You know, I was going to run Nike. You know, like that was my dream, you know. You know, that was the goal. And I quickly found out that that wasn't anything what I wanted to do. I got into corporations and realized that I really struggled in them to find my voice and my place, and realized the work wasn't what I wanted to be really doing. And I got sidetracked for a very long time. I actually went into hospitality for many, 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 many years and rose through that food chain. And then ended up running a food company before I got into talent. So I, you know, if you had asked me at 21, if that's what I would have been doing, I would have said no. I would have said that I should be CEO by the time I'm 25 of Nike, of course. And so that did not happen that way. And I think there was a light bulb moment about the culture piece of it for me. And part of that happened when I determined that that place that I was doing that job was not the right place for me. And I realized that culture, especially in my generation, was so heavy on the work side and focused on how many hours you worked and the KPIs and the metrics and less on how people felt in the seat and felt doing the work they were doing, that I woke up one day and I quit my job. It's the only job I've ever walked out on without giving notice. And that changed my trajectory for the rest of my career in a big way.
It's I find these things fascinating too, but when I find like sometimes when you make or you're able to, like through reflection, make connections between things that are common, like say between what you were doing before in the hospitality industry, which is very, you know, people orientated, you know, you're serving people and you're helping people. And I mean, you could easily say there's a lot of, you know, service-based industries or other ones where people deal with people, obviously, because that's what it's all about. Like it's selling stuff, like selling a service, or you're providing a service or whatever. But like I do find there's, and I guess it gets back to me, why I asked that question in the first place, which is like there's sort of people, some people more than others, sometimes only upon reflection are more predisposed to do certain things. And you don't really know that until like you've been doing it for a while and you go, oh, that's interesting. I can sort of see that clearly now. And, it's a little bit sort of similar in some ways to a light, well, not exactly a light bulb moment, but I used to think, like say before we had our own business that we've had for a long time now, I used to just have this general idea. I was like, I started in business and that was my first experience in that. But then I actually reflected and I was like, actually, no, I've been brought up, like we had a corner store and my mom had a corner store and my dad was doing things on his own. And upon reflection, I was like, oh, actually, there's been this big influence with working with people and I didn't even realize it. So I guess like, whilst that's not the same as your story, there's a precursor to other things. And then it's only upon reflection you go, oh, actually that experience was really important, you know, for, and like you were saying too, which is, I find really interesting, like the catalyst is like you were doing it and you were probably, I mean, from the sounds of it, I've met you for the first time. So, I mean, I'm like, all of a sudden I know all about Desiree. I don't. Clearly, you know, but like you obviously, like, and you're working with people and that was very normal and you get used to it. But then there's this other catalyst where, you felt like there was this thing that really jumped out and that became like a bit of a mission. Cause I saw that you used, I saw it when I was doing like secret research on you to find out stuff about. Which wasn't very hard because I just Googled your name and all, and all the stuff came up. So it didn't take me very long. But like, there was like, you were talking about revolutionizing the whole talent thing. I thought, oh, that's cool. That's like a good way to say it. So as a segue, like when you, wherever that was, because you'll know better than me because you said it, but like, What's that? Because that's a very like mission based kind of way of saying it, right? It's very, so what's the general thinking? Like it's kind of obvious to people and what that means, but it clearly means a lot to you. So could you just like expand on that?
As to
what that actually means. With the talent side of things, like what does that mean?
Sure. Yeah, you know, listen, when I got into talent, I've had many roles in talent, on purpose almost. I was, a recruiter. I was, you know, a leader of recruiters. Then I actually sold recruiting. And then I went to the operations data and analytics side of recruiting. And now I sit on the marketing side of talent. Right. And so I've had all of these kind of roles over time. And I, you know, we always, you know, there's a lot of people who say that the talent system is broken. Right. They say it all the time. Right. And I do think it needs a revamp of how we think about it. And first of all, knowing that talent starts with humans. Right. I think we forget that there are humans at the other side of a screen or the other side of a resume. Or the other side of all these other pieces, you know, we talk about ghosting and we talk about all these other things. It's because we've taken the human out of the talent piece of this, right? And also this other, and then that relates back to my work that I do with culture, right? It all goes back to this human element of how you do work and come to the table as an organization. And so talent follows that same path. And if you start with talent as the beginning of how you bring people into an organization, because that's where it starts, right? Mm. If you start taking the human out of it from the start, it always ends up, it'll stay that way the entire time. And so when I talk about revolutionizing it, I'm talking about talent in individuals, people, myself, whoever's working in talent, reminding themselves that there's a human element to the work that we do. There are humans on the other side of the screen, and that we need to remember that every time we go into it. And also that there are hiring managers who are human, who are facing obstacles, that there are CEOs who are humans that have to hit a bottom line. If you take the human out of all of that and just look at it like everybody sucks, right? Then you start to get mad and you say the system's all broken, right? Well, it's not that it's broken. We just lost some of the human stuff about it. You know, a long time ago, talent was done on note cards. Like there were, you know, you knew a candidate and you would pick up an index card and you would call that candidate you knew because you had a connection to that candidate and you would try to place them somewhere. Now that everything's automated and there's systems and processes and, you know, you have these big applicant tracking systems and all of these things, we keep removing all of the human out of the work. And so I am on a mission to not only put the human back in talent, but also to make talent a strategic partner to the business and less transactional. We tend to be super transactional when it comes to talent, as recruiters, and we just need to do a better job.
Is there a connection there? I know you didn't specifically talk about the technology that is used, but is there a connection? I guess this is like a leading question because I feel that it is, you know, that there's like this link between, because you see it in other things, right? You see it on, I mean, there's an aspect of it on social media. There's an aspect of it in like other systems, like say even CRMs or other things that do on one hand help, like, as they clearly do, like they help people do things, more efficiently if they're actually used properly. You know,
right?
Because they're just like a tool ultimately. And this topic has cropped up with like a bunch of people time and time and time again on the podcast because it's a super integrated part of everything we do. Right. And I sort of work in that industry. So I sort of know how people end up sort of using things, but it can have a tendency to, dehumanize it just sort of happens quite slowly. It's funny because it can happen really slowly. And there's something very strange about how people end up using it because it's more efficient and you can do more and there's more people and things all of a sudden. And then people are busy who are using it. Then the next thing you know, you're just like sort of a number, even though intellectually, yeah. Like you as the user or me as the user would be, you know, that's clearly not the case. They're like a real person and you're not actually thinking and you're not really doing that, but it can still have that sort of habit. So, cause it's interesting cause I latched onto that because of what you said about like you used to have this card, you used to have this physical sort of card. And I had noticed it straight away what came in my mind was at networking groups when I used to go, like, you know, to BNI stuff, you know, BNI and like all those sort of like groups. And I noticed, and this is like some years ago now where BNI, for example, transitioned from they got this really great app, like it's really, you know, very efficient, super good, but they transitioned from this in person in the meeting slip that you would stand up and physically go over to the other person and give it to them like an exchange and shake their hand and physically do that. And I, when it happened and went over to the app, I was like, oh yeah, there's, and I like heaps of people like that's more efficient. And it is like, it is more, you can track things better. And, but I always then shortly after that even though I'm a person who's who works in that area and knows the advantages and it's like very across it and enjoys it, I actually started to really, along with some other people that I know, because I remember us having a chat about this, kind of started to miss that, like that physical thing. Because in that instance, and like it may have been like a similar thing with like a card, there is something special that happens when you've got something physical. And not saying, you know, I'm not saying to everyone listening, we should all just revert to that because that's probably not going to happen anyway, but they're probably going to be talking about you and whatever they call me. And then, but I was missing it. And I actually said at one point in our meeting some years ago, I was like, I think we should actually revert, like still have the tracking because that's good, but let's revert just for the ceremony of it and that process, because I think it's important. We're like, no, I don't want to do that. It's like,
I was at a conference recently at I've been to numerous conferences this year, but you know, you go to them now and you don't even have to look at the person in the eye. You look at their name tag and scan their, you know, take a picture of their QR code. Like how, it takes a human out of the whole interaction. You don't ever have to look at my face ever. You just have to take your phone and go to my QR code and get my QR code. It's like insanity, right? I'm like, hello, would you like to talk to me? Shake my hand? Like, no, can I scan your badge? And I'm like, sure. Like, we haven't had 1 minute of conversation, but you do whatever you feel like you need to do, right? So, like, just little things, right?
It is, but those little things, and once again, this is like something people will go, oh, yes, the little things matter. But that's easy to bandy that term around, like a lot of things where people just go, blah, 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 and then they say it, and then you move on. You don't really think about it because you're, you know, hungry, you want lunch or whatever. You know, or you're like, you know, I want to, you know, go and like sleep, you know, or you have like other better things to do. But these things are actually really important because, and you can't, like it's easy to pass over these sort of things. And, you know, and when you said with the car thing, it's like, like that's really true. And there is an underlying, I feel there's an underlying simple aspect that people have for technology reasons, because times move on and then people discard, they've automatically then discarded this other thing. And it doesn't mean necessarily, I mean, there is a middle point. There's great examples of, you know, of, where you can still use technology and still do those other things. It doesn't have to be one or the other. You know, it's just a bit of like thinking about how we could do it. And I guess have like the willingness to actually think that's important in the first place, that it's not just an extra bit of stuff that, is useless, but it's the personal connection piece that I think is the, you know, the key message here. And it's obviously something that sounds like it's really sort of big in your world, in your thinking, right?
No, absolutely. I mean, listen, I love technology. Don't get me wrong. I have every app known to man. I have all the things. Like, I want my life to be efficient and, you know, because I do a lot of things in a day. My day is packed, right? So the efficiency of technology, the speed of use, all of those things, I totally agree with. I just think there's a way that we can interject some human into a lot of the things that we do, and especially as being leaders in the talent industry, that we need to be concentrating on more than how AI is going to take our jobs, right? Like, I want people to focus on how, you know, how they can put some more human into the business. And I think things will start to change.
It sounds like I've got a little window, I guess, and it's a pretty small window. It's my sister had been much more in sort of HR and recruitment too. That was like her world for a long time, and she was, you know, awfully good at it. And she's got like a more, you know, sort of stable job in the government in similar area. But so I had this sort of, and I guess from a personal perspective, knowing her, and she's a people person too, and just hearing her talk about it, I used to always, marvel, I guess, to some extent, as with that job and that sort of role, and you're in that, you know, I'm similar sort of area, as to the significance. Like when I'd sort of reflect on it a bit more, I'd be like, that's actually an incredibly important job to find, like for that company or, you know, company, whatever size business, to find these right people. Because at the end of the day, like, obviously once people get there and the right culture and, you know, and everyone, you know, from leadership down and everyone doing the job and everyone playing nice together, that's super important. But that first piece about finding, one, the person with the right sort of, from the technical point of view, like the skill set, their good fit, like required, when I'd used to reflect on it, I'd be like, that requires a bunch of, you know, deeper understanding. I mean, you could go down just the, like you were talking about before, about their number, they tick this box, the blah, blah, yeah, blah, 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 right? And they go, oh, right, yeah, one, they're smart, two, they're, you know,
right,
whatever right, it is, like, you know, there's all the things they got to tick. And,
right,
and you got your list, which is then important too, you know, but that's not important. But then understanding like the business, like what the business is like, and those, that's almost like the concierge service, I guess. Hey, like you're matching this with this. It's like, that's pretty important. Like to get, yeah, that, you know, that responsibility of doing that. Once again, it's easy to pass that off as, or you're the, you know, get the, you're just doing this job and you got to match them. But I still always think that's a big responsibility. And, like, is, what do you find, when that now comes to, this is going somewhere, Desiree, by the way, you know.
Oh, I'm sure that it is.
This is going, just in case you were wondering, it says, leading to then how, like, for given got this responsibility, and then you come along and you've got this, you know, bigger significant emphasis on diversity and inclusion and how important that is in the workplace. And you come along, and what I'd sort of, am interested to know is, in this day and age at the moment, is it still like an issue? And if so, like how much, where you come to people and people, you know, what different levels of acceptance that that's even important is.
Yeah.
Is there where people just go, look, I know I got to do it because like my mate told me I should, or my other friend who's the CEO of this said that it's important. And we've got to do it because we've got to make everyone sort of happy, as opposed to people like then actually going, yeah, I do think it's important. And I'm not just, yeah, saying it like for the hell of it. I know there's a process where people don't know and then they get educated. I'm not everyone's going, right, to wake up one day and go, oh yes, like I feel like exactly the same way that like you do, for example. Cause it, right, doesn't really work like that, does it? Like people just don't.
No.
And they have to be, yeah, educated. And that's cool. Like that's how it should be. But what's your general,
feeling
of the landscape?
So it's changed, right? I think in 2022, we started to see the downturn. 2023 got worse. And so there's been a backlash on DEI work, especially in the United States, about taking away programs and taking away money and taking universities, closing whole departments, chief diversity officers getting burnt out and leaving. I mean, it's just been a really hard 23 and 2024 for for DEI. But what I will say is that DEI work is an ebb and flow kind of thing anyway. It's going to change based on the political climate. It's going to change on, it can be very reactionary to things that happen. Like, for instance, the George Floyd murder, all of a sudden, now lots of us have been doing this work for many, many years, but George Floyd made it a big deal in the United States. And all of a sudden, it was everywhere. Every organization started to build these programs and do these things. But it had been around for forever. Maybe we didn't all call it DEI. We called it something that we were doing at work, right? And so now we're back in that phase where now everybody says it needs a revamp. And I do agree, because what happened is we started putting people in the seats just to check off a box of a number, right? And meet a quota instead of actually doing the work that surrounds that. And so now it again is going through this ebb and flow period where people are bringing it back. And I always say, whenever I do an interview or anyone, I do a speaking engagement, I say, I don't care what you call it. Right. I don't care if you call it DEI. I don't care what you call it. Just do the work. Right. Do the work. The data supports it. We can talk about McKinsey. We can talk about Deloitte. We can talk about all the people that have done these productivity and innovation studies that say that this work actually produces more productive and more innovative environments. Bottom line, I'm a data person. If I can tell you the numbers and but that someone smarter than me was able to pull together, then I'm going to show you those numbers. Yes, there are people smarter than me in the world. but yeah, we're in this period where those of us who have had this mission for many, many years are still fighting to keep this alive as a mission. And I do believe there's or organizations on every level. There are organizations that are still doing it just because they set it as a corporate responsibility and they're still going to always check the box. There are ones that know that this work is important and value it and are always going to have people like me helping them get to the goal of, you know, inclusion at the end of the day. And there are those who just said, oh, the government says I don't have to do it anymore and everybody hates it. So we're not giving any more money to it anymore, right? We're just going to stop.
What a crazy sort of landscape.
I always tell people, don't come to this side of the fence to do this work if you ain't ready for disappointment, because it is one of the most disappointing and celebratory fields to work in. It can be the hardest work in the world because you're constantly having to prove that this is worth the time and worth the effort and worth the money. And it's a hard thing to do every day. Right.
I bet it is. Yeah. I mean, it's only then when I have the opportunity to chat, I mean, to someone like yourself who's like boots on the ground actually doing it. It's, you know, it's like anyone who would, you know, think generally but broadly about, I guess, what, you know, I do or other things, but like where you're dealing, like having to, I guess, you know, I can only imagine because these things are very connected to, you know, often to people's ideologies or to their political leaning. I mean, hey, like anyone listening who doesn't, I mean, I'm no big great political analyst or like social analyst or anything. But what I do know is that like, you know, people don't, unlike some people will like share exactly how they feel about these issues or other issues and other people will don't. And there's a lot of stuff that flies under the radar. Where people will just, you know, it doesn't, you know, mean the world is like a terrible place and everyone's like not saying how they feel about things. But the reality is like in this instance too, because it's so intertwined with people's, you know, values this way or that way, that I can only imagine that like when, you know, you know, having to fight for particular things and somebody under the radar is really morally for whatever reason opposed because people are, you know, I mean, that's, you know, like it or not, that's how things are. Like,
yeah. People
think this, people think that, and there's no amount of cajoling or, you know, nice, like friendly chats going to make them think otherwise. However, it's interesting too, because like I do actually, there's a lot of, well, maybe not evidence, but you hear various, stories that are quite, heartening about, you know, people having, you know, actual just human discussions with people about particular things in extreme circumstances that change people's minds. So people's minds can be changed. I'm not sure whether you heard, I'm not great with names in particular stories. So I'm going to say this guy who did this thing. No, but there's,
well, I know that guy.
And you do you? Oh, well, that's amazing. But there's this story. There's a Afro-American guy, and it was a story that I heard on Joe Rogan. It was really interesting, and it was about, and it generally relates to what we're talking about. But there was a guy, and he was story that he's recounting was this fellow who was a musician, and he ended up meeting this particular guy who was the head of a Ku Klux Klan group, and he ended up forming. And this group of Klan guys were sitting at this bar, and they were listening to him play music, and they ended up having a chat to this guy afterwards, and they ended up saying, "Oh, we're actually part of the Ku Klux Klan." And he was like, "Oh, right, okay, right." And so they ended up, but what happened? I'm not sure we've heard this story, but they formed this friendship, this guy, and the story ended up being that this musician ended up generally convincing, just through his friendship with this guy, to actually completely leave that whole ideology behind, and ended up actually turning that into a thing that then happened to a number of other people in the Klan, where he would just, you know, talk to them just generally through human interaction and conversation, because this guy was, you know, just generally a nice guy. And I thought it was a fascinating thing, because it does fly in the face of the general idea that these things can't happen, that they're sort of set in stone. And it's, I guess, in what we're talking about too, is this idea at the root level that I think is really true, is that when people actually just get in a room, often with each other, and they're talking person to person about stuff, their family, their lives, there's these other things that break down, and you don't realize it. Like, you have to obviously get through a bunch of stuff to do that. And I mean, it's a more extreme example and story, but it does still relate to things, because of, you know, these philosophies that people have, even if they're not that extreme. You know, it's like, right. Oh, like, you know, I don't like DEI because of, yeah, maybe they don't even know. Yeah, okay. They don't even know why. It's just,
I think the biggest thing I've learned on this journey, that I probably wouldn't have told you, is probably the biggest thing that I would have learned, is that most people, when educated about this topic, tend to at least acknowledge its worth, right?
Yeah.
And I don't think that would, if you had asked me when I started this journey, I don't think that I would have told you that all I had to do is go in a room and educate people about, you know, bias and all of these things. Most people are just generally uneducated and comfortable with their own space, right? Yeah. It's hard for them to understand other people's perspective if it's not their lived experience.
Yeah.
But when you start to educate other humans, again, the human part of this, right, about other humans, they tend to actually be really good at processing that information and then saying, oh, even if I don't still agree with it, I understand what you're saying and your point of view, which is really some of the time all you're going to get. Yeah, you may not sway anybody to the other side, but at least they're listening and you know, are able to say, oh, I kind of get where you're coming from. Now, that's not everybody. That's to be true. Yeah. But it is a lot of people. And the more speaking engagements that you do, the more things that I talk at, the more times people have heard me in interviews like this, they're like, you know what? I listened to you. That one thing you said got me thinking. And then they do research on their own or they do something else. And it starts to sway them to a different way of thinking.
Yeah, but it's a bridge. You know, it's a bridge, right? Yeah.
Like
it's
right, absolutely.
Yeah, it's just a bridge. Like not everyone will take the walk completely over the bridge, but they'll stop like halfway and like look at the view. I mean, that sounds like a pretty good quote. I should write that down. Maybe somebody else
will write it down too.
Yeah. That's my quote. Don't take it, Desiree.
I will not. I also think too that, you know, as generations start to phase out of organizations, right now we're looking at the boomers, you know, completely rolling out. Gen X is slowly at its end, you know, or hopefully I'm Gen X. Hopefully I'm coming to the end of this corporate life. you know, the newer generations are seeing this work differently and are not willing to put up with as much stuff as boomers and Gen Xers were. And I think it's easier to talk to those generations. Now, I'm not saying they completely agree with it either, all of them, but they're way more open in the idea of an environment and organizations that supports everyone in that organization versus Gen X and baby boomers who were like, you go to work, you do your job, and you show up and don't complain, right? Like, that was pretty much it.
Yeah.
The next millennials and the Gen Zs, they're like, no, I'm not putting up with it. And I want this to feel like it's a place where I'm valued and heard, you know? And I that's changing the landscape of the work that I do as well.
What were we going to say that, Desiree? Were you going to finish?
No, I was just going to say that it's been an interesting journey to talk to Gen Xers and now starting to talk to Gen Z. It's a very different speech you have to give.
I bet. Right? Yeah. I mean, this is where like, you know, people like yourself, where you have to specifically, like you think about these different generations, which are, once again, they're these terms that people, you know, throw around. It was like, you know what the Gen Zs are and all that sort of stuff. Right. I mean, I have a different interesting perspective because I've sort of had to do over the years for various clients. There's been a couple of times where there's been different infographics that we've, designed that have statistics about like, say, like buying habits and things. And I'm generally from the data perspective and the visuals just making them look nice, but also make them a bit of like, but as I'm doing things, I'm just generally absorbing stuff and I'm like, oh, that's interesting that's, because generally data doesn't, for the most part, unless it's of course manipulated data, it doesn't really, you know, lie. You can gain like funny little sort of insights or you think you can anyway. I mean, you can always, you can always, like, things are always generally twisted this way or another. I mean, that's not.
Absolutely, they are.
That's not that strange. Like, people, you know, you've got like, oh, it means they like this more. And, you know, you might say on average, that might be true for particular areas, but that point where you've got like intergenerational, you know, habits, like you were talking about, somebody has been entrenched in them for the most part, not everyone, but on average, this particular ethos more than the next generation. And there's always that thing that just seems like, almost seems like a natural human thing that I don't feel will ever go away, where the older generation or the, you know, says to the younger ones, like they're going, oh, that's not, I've even found myself which I never thought I would, you know, think these things of me going, like thinking, I haven't said it out loud, fortunately. I was like, in my day, you know, we're done. I was like, oh my God, I'm thinking that. Like that actually thinking these things, because it almost seems like a natural, like my assumption of how that works then is that that's like a natural thing that just occurs. Like because you're used to A, B, C, D, E, then all of a sudden you see X, Y, Z, and you're like, oh, I don't like that. And at first glance, unless there's a catalyst, like some conversation, or you're actually talking to those people, or you're a friend who's that sort of person, or
right.
come along and go, hey, everyone, like, wake up, you know, what's going on? Where you're just like talking to people about it, educating people, you know, in whatever way. There's lots of reasons why people never, never understand like another generation, right? They
Absolutely.
Just go, it's like, and it's not, you know, like, oh, everyone in that generation is really ignorant. They just don't, like, it comes back to the human thing, I think. Hey, like, people are just, they don't have a chance to interact with this particular group of people. So therefore, there's whatever you want to call it, fear or the fear of the unknown. And for some people, it's like greater than other people. Other people, it's just like, oh, I don't understand them and I don't want to, you know, that sort of thing.
Right.
It's like,
also, if you're a parent of one of those people in a different generation, your natural inclination is to be more parent-like to that, that generation.
True,
you know what I mean? to be like so accepting, you're more like turning music down type of attitude. You know what I mean? Like that for me is like the where I've come from in my later years, you know, it's like, oh my God, these kids. I say it out loud now, and it's like, oh, kids these days, you know, I turn 50 at the end of this month, and I'm like, wow, like that's, you know, that's something. And these kids these days, actually, I have a lot of appreciation.
And we don't have any auto tune in our days. We don't have any.
I know, right?
Yeah, actually, right. I found myself. But this is something that I mean, like nobody would ever, you know, on certain fronts with certain things, no one's ever going to convince me otherwise that like something that, you know, just I just heard it the other day because I like good music and I like all different sorts of music and like, but I did reflect on, I'm going, like I said before, it's like, oh no, I'm that guy. Like I'm the guy. I'm the guy who's going, oh, these, you know, this music these days. And I was like, oh, that one was sort of shocking in my own mind. And two, then I was like, yeah, but I don't like it. I don't like it. And I don't, I'm not going to now reflect just because I had this like amazing realization. I'm not going to go, oh, I should like it. I was like, nah, it still sounds like crap to me. I don't like it.
Right.
And that's fine too. I mean, like people like things and other people don't like them. Who cares?
Right.
You know, move on, everyone. You know, and, but it doesn't mean you have to be enemies. Yeah, you can just go, you can just go, you can have mutual sort of understanding.
Just have some mutual, like, you know, respect for the fact that they're living their own lives as a human, right? Like, everybody's got to live their own life and take their own path and choose or make their own choices and do their own thing. You can have respect and not have like fall in love with that idea or that music or that you can have respect that that's what they choose to listen to or that's how they choose to do things. I have, you know, I have a lot of respect for the younger generation right now. I wish that. In my generation, I demanded a little bit more from an organization. I wish that I had not taken a lot of the crap. I had pushed for equity and pay. I had done a lot of the things that the generations are the younger generations are doing now. They're saying, I'm just not going to stand for it. And I, you know, the work that I do allows me to speak to so many people. In both my marketing work, and my regular job culture work that I do on my own and culture at work I do for my regular job as well allows me to talk to so many different people. And it's broadened my perspective on so many things over time that I think I'm a much different person than I was at 22 or 23. And it has changed perspectives of things that I thought before. And that's a good thing, right?
Yeah.
If we could all be a little more open to ideas and to where this world is going, I think we'd have a much better place.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. I mean, I think there's also the perspective too. There's an assumption that when you just from the simple perspective of I like this, I don't like that. And then that leads to whatever perspective or acceptance or rejection of stuff, you know, ideas we're talking about here on the podcast or just things in general. I think the assumption that just because someone doesn't currently have the same view or likes or whatever that you currently have, there seems to be often an implied, you know, assumption, even if you're not consciously thinking about it, that they would never have that same view. But like, yeah. It's not really true because sometimes it just means like they, like I like a particular part of say ancient history, right? And I'm like learning about this particular, part of, you know, Greek history or this, you know, military history, whatever, you know, and I'm say into that, and I start talking about it to somebody and they haven't had an exposure and they're like, oh, that's incredibly boring. Oh my God. Why are you talking about that? And then at some point they have a friend who talks about a similar thing to them and there's a catalyst for them to go, actually, it's kind of cool. Like, because they said it from a different perspective and all of a sudden
right. There's
this bridge over. Right. And
right.
I find that idea interesting because it's often not like my takeaway from those sort of experiences, not that I had that experience, but I was talking to somebody about Greek history because that's just like, but a loose example, like when, but people do then, sometimes it's not the content, it's the person that talks to them about it or how they say it or that they saw some inspirational thing from someone who they relate to and they just happen to be talking about exactly the same thing and it probably like I'm imagining it gets back to a little bit of stuff about I read about you when I was doing my research on like how you like to use sort of humor and like you know sarcasm in I was reading stuff.
You did. I'm very proud of you.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Desiree. Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate that. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. So I see how I was able to create a segue, like loosely.
Yes. You know, I love it.
Yeah. Well, there you go. That was my opportunity. Cool. I grabbed it. And so.
Oh, good for you. Good for you. Yeah. I mean, I have found, that serious topics sometimes are taken better by people when there's humor behind them, right? Mm-hmm. I also am a very blunt, sarcastic person in my natural state. And when I try to make everything super buttoned up and professional, it comes off inauthentic from me, right? People are used to me being, you know, kind of in your face, tell it like it is. I'm originally from the East Coast, which you probably don't know what that means, but, it, you know, we don't mince words lightly. And so, you know, I started this journey in a very different way. I was super professional and buttoned up and like, you know, taking the serious approach, but it didn't work for me. It didn't work. It didn't feel right to me. And what felt right is to be a little bit sarcastic, a little bit, you know, a humorous, even though these are serious topics. And then on top of it, you know, being my blunt, natural self. And people actually resonated with that. My mantra is do better people. And, you know, I honestly believe that, right? Like, I just want people to do better. And when I say do better people, it comes out with a little bit of blunt, a little bit of sarcasm in it, but I mean it. Like, I want you to do better in your life, whatever that means. Whatever that means for you, whether it's in DEI, whether it's in taking self-care, whether that is employee well-being, if it means being a better leader, whatever that is, I want you to do better at it. I want you to look at all the perspectives and try to be a better whatever, right? Yeah. Because it's the only way to up your game in life, right? It's to do better. Well, you're consistently doing the same thing all the time. Yeah. And I'm kind of sad for you that you don't evolve, right? But I think we should all evolve.
No, 100%. I mean, there's for every reason, and it's easy to take that out of context, I think, too. Like, right. People will be,
yes.
I don't want to be like a high performance person. It's like, well, you don't have to.
That's not what I mean.
Yeah, that's right. But that's an example, though. I mean, I sort of said that too, because it's easy for people to jump to all sorts of conclusions. You know, it was like, yeah, I thought I was speaking English to this other English speaking person. And yet somehow, right. Like, I feel like I'm talking to somebody on Mars. I mean, that does, right. that, you know, sometimes happens. And that happens because people have got their own set of, you know, one, expectations about, like, you, like, you know, they go, yes. Oh, I'm going to, and that's, and I mean, I guess, you know, from a, I'm no psychologist, but I sort of imagine that generally speaking, we've got, you know, memory, you know, preconceived ideas about things. On one hand, they're kind of probably just helpful things for us just to exist, right? Because you know, instead of like encountering every time I encounter Desiree or a person down the street, and you have no idea what to expect, which you generally still in reality don't, because you're completely different to the other person, but you've got an expectation. But then it can also be harmful, you know, when you've got a preconceived idea and you go into it. So I mean, there's like, I get on one, you know, society wise, why people, you know, just inherently have to have, you know, it's like a pre-understanding in order just to get by. But then there's an element of then going, breaking that down to then actually find that just their willingness to be, you know, and that's linked to the whole improvement thing. I feel, because unless you're willing just to, that's not even just about like you being better, but I think I'm just sort of thinking about this on the fly, trying to make sense of it for myself. Like, just go, if you're willing just to go, if you're open to finding out about other people, that by default is helping yourself too.
Absolutely.
Isn't it really? Because like you're kind of just going, oh, I've just learned something. And it's something I've brought up the more podcasts I've done. This is now like episode, whatever it is, like I think you're 75 or something. So I've got some good data now, like generally, because it is like, for me, it's kind of just the general in terms of the memories. I'm like, oh, there's an interesting bunch of things that crop up over and over again. And one of them is, you know, sort of part of what we're talking about is people just helping other people. And I mean, call it whatever you want, like cliched, you know, chit chat about, you know, self-help or whatever, but it's really real. Like it's really true. People, I actually firmly believe, I think it's really a real thing. The people inherently, obviously has to be a willingness, but when people are in the right, you know, environment and they're in like all sorts of industries, talk to a lot of different sorts of people, but there's often in people's stories, there's often a catalyst, which is why now I ask it more, because I know it's a thing. It's like a thing that always crops up on the podcast. Like often when I go or a story and people going, you know, this happened, And that was like the catalyst to do or to pivot my career or, and it's often about helping other people. And they're like, you make money on the way because you've got business and stuff. So,
of course.
Yeah, if you can do like the two things, even better, but like helping other people sort of first. And there's the, is that driving force behind it? And I think that's really cool. It's like, it gives me, gives me hope for the human race. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. I have so much hope for the human race as well.
Totally.
I do as well. I wouldn't do the work I do if I didn't believe that the human race can be a better version of itself. And I hope for that, right? I also want to say that the reason that I have always used humor and sarcasm, a little bit of crazy in there, is because I find that people resonate when they can make a connection with you, right? Connection is, and it's a little bit of what you were talking about, right? If I say something to you and we have no connection, you may not accept something from me if you don't feel connected to me. But if we're connected, you're more willing to listen, right? To hear and not just listen, you actually hear me, right? Because we have some sort of relationship or connection. And so I find that people feel, even through my social media, feel some sort of connection through that type of tone versus the other connection, which is super ultra LinkedIn-y and professional and kind of, you know, boring, right? They find the connection to whatever I'm saying. And it is.
It's pretty boring.
It's so boring. They find the connection in it. And then they're like, they'll reach out to me and say something funny to me back or DM me or say something crazy. And it's just because, even through the words, they found some kind of spark or connection, even if it's a couple of words in a social media post. And so, you know, I like to make connections. I am a people person, obviously. I like the connections that I've made along the way, and I always hope for more. And, you know, I think it's essential for people to feel connected to something, whether that's other people or passion or desire or whatever. And I hope to drive that for people.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. I think the, I feel too, obviously I 100% agree when it comes to humor and that whole sort of side of things. Just cause that's how generally, I mean, from a selfish perspective, I like to, like I think most people do, like to enjoy yourself and like to have fun when you do. And if you can have fun then in business then too, or just able to be yourself. But I would then also, because I think this is, if I even probably think about myself, because you like to be able to be yourself, right? Like when you're with somebody, that if you can do that, that's the best. That's the, I'm like, everyone puts on some level of facade in different situations. It's just like, even if you're not, you know, like, I'm going to be, you know, this person. No one thinks like that, but they do put on little, you know, different elements. But if you can be yourself, that I would then sort of argue that ultimately, like, is a big part of what you're talking about that you've, you know, find works with humor is, of course, a big part of it. But the main part is that you're ultimately able to be yourself, like that you can actually just be because that's you. And so therefore that's authentic and people, resonate with that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have found, excuse my little stupid dog in the background, if you can hear him. He's so annoying. I mean, everyone should not get a little dog.
He wants attention.
Oh my gosh. It's because I blocked him out of my office and he's so upset. Anyway, so he's like really, really pissed off. So he's also like 5 pounds tall. So he's like really tiny. And so his bark is super ear piercing.
High energy pitch.
Oh, high energy, really annoying. Yeah, the homie. I've learned, this has been a series of lessons learned throughout the long, along the way, throughout my, you know, 30-year career of doing this kind of work along with others. And, you know, I've tried many times to do this and have had many failures to make those connections. And people find, you know, this one over the past probably 10 years, this approach has worked for me in a way that has worked like no other. And so I've chosen to keep it that way.
It's trial. Well, it's like, I mean, I'm sure you will sort of probably relate to this too in terms of marketing, but like all of that, like as is marketing is trial and error. It's like try something, like, you know, from an educated point of view, you don't just try anything. Like you try, you know, things based on what you know and other information, see if it works, refine it, do it again. I mean, that's just, there's no like one size fits all thing. Like you get closer to that element of, perfection, but you see, like, you see this sort of common thing too with a lot of people who are at the, you know, the sort of the highest level of whatever they're doing. I've found anyway. And not everyone, but most, there's an element of real modesty and humility, like at the end of the day with a lot of people. And I always like, for me, cause for many years, my wife and I used to do, lots of martial arts. And now, I'm sort of grandmaster that we had who was, who still is, he's still alive. He's a Master Sung Soo Lee. Like he's an older Korean man, and it was always like, if there was going to be anyone who could, you know, regard themselves or talk about themselves as the expert in the area, it was this guy. Like he's in terms of rank and experience, but he was always like, he always had this sort of ongoing message all the time of perseverance, and that you never, like, it's an ongoing journey. Like even if you're, and that was always, I don't know. I mean, people listening would be like, yeah, that's the old, you know, martial arts. I'm sort of cliched guy saying stuff, you know, sort of thing, but it's really true. And it was always very important to, both my wife and I, when we were doing it, it was really encouraging. Yeah. It was really a real thing. It was like, this guy could say, you know, this about himself, but he was always, and there was this really cool idea that has always stuck with me too, which was manifested itself in the idea of the belt that you get to, like you go from white in terms of like a good metaphor. It's like you go from white, like an absence of color. And you fill that up to get to black and then the very higher levels of black. But then ultimately you return back to white. You return to a state of like lack of knowledge because you've learned so much that you're able to unlearn like things as you reach like a state, and that manifested itself. And I actually saw it, and I remember it because it was really great. Sort of thing, just being, you know, sort of a student, is he used to have his normal belt that he would just wear to, I'm like a nice new black belt, but he had on a number of times his original black belt, and it was like literally falling apart, and the black, and it was becoming like gray, and all the color was like draining out of it. And I was like, oh man, that's so one, just a visual that, cause representation of experience. It was like, I just love things like that. For whatever reason, you sort of see it, and it was tattered. It was like literally falling apart, this belt, cause he'd had it since he was, cause he's now in his sort of late 70s, I think. But even then, it was like this growing the experience, but it's going back to this original state.
White color. That's so cool.
It was like filling it up. It was like filling up the cup, but then it's emptying out to return to this sort of state of lack of knowledge of well, not probably lack of knowledge, but returning to a point where you are able to and you want to learn new things even more, despite the fact that you're super experienced. And
yeah.
I always really like that idea, because I think like it, you know, it obviously relates to modesty and humility as well. And like,
yes,
that's, you know, that's, I think that's a really understated important thing. Like, it's obviously in sort of relationships with people, which is your whole thing. Like, it's all,
yeah,
all about people, right? Like, everyone's, yeah, like, you're trying to, so if you don't have, if you can't have some of that, you know, I'm not saying you've got to be, you know, like, that's a learning process too. You can't just be,
yes,
you know, it's meeting people for the first time. Yeah, it could be hard sometimes, hey, like when you have to get to know people and, you know, the whole
right.
trust. At the end of the day, you got to be able to trust, but it's a process. Like, I think the acceptance, but the acceptance, like, what do you think about the idea? Because our world is very filled with quick fixes, you know, like going, and we're very used to, everyone's trained like unwittingly with like, you can have everything now, which I think I often feel like it makes it harder for people, because everyone's kind of unwittingly trained to want quick answers or quick things, that it makes it culturally and sort of mentally maybe harder for some people just to actually slow down. And I'm like,
oh, it's impossible.
Yeah. Mm. So how do we, do you see like, or have you, like in the context, if we just bring this back to what you do, like matching, you know, people, like had with, you know, with the employers and all that,
yes,
all these very, you know, tricky dynamics that you've got to juggle. How do you, like, is that like the slowing down of people just getting to understand each other? Like, is that something you find you have to navigate?
Yeah, we find it all the time in talent. Listen, instant gratification is the world we live in. Like, they can get it. It's, look at Amazon, right? Like, I can get something the same day, like in hours, right? Yeah. Some drone flies over my house and drops a package. Like, it's really that serious now, that anything that I want, I can have in a matter of hours, pretty much. That world that we have created, that's what we're expecting from companies, from other people, from, you know, the world around us, has created a culture of complete inability to slow down, be patient, and wait. And talent in its finest form, you know, we used to say it takes 90 days to fill a role. Right? 90 days. Now it's going from 90 days to 60 days to 45 days. And if you're really good at it, you'll have it filled in 30, right? Yeah. Like, we've gone and said that we can fill a role in less than a month. I can interview candidates, screen candidates, put them through the whole process and find the perfect candidate for you in less than a month. That is absolutely nuts. But it's the instant gratification. A hiring manager needs to fill that role. That seat being empty is costing the organization money. I need to put somebody in that seat. So I want it, and I want it now. Right.
Yeah.
And so this world of finding the perfect fit or the right candidate or whatever is slowly has diminished over time. Now we just want to put a body in the seat that can answer all the questions in the interview. it's like a totally crazy thing, right? And then we wonder why turnover rates are high, right? Because we don't take the time and slow down and think about who we're putting in the seat. We're just putting a body in the seat that we hope works out, right? And then when they get there, we're not being really good leaders and slowing down to really acclimate them to their job, their culture, how they fit into the team, making them feel included and not excluded, you know, the hearing and listening and all of those things, because we're moving at such a rapid pace. I know in the United States, it's the worst. Like, it is entirely what we call hustle culture here. And I know people hate that word. So all the listeners, please don't hate on me for saying that. But it's very true. We live in a hustle culture. We're moving way too fast at the speed of light, and we want everything done yesterday. That culture promotes burnout. It promotes, you know, bad talent finds. It promotes turnover. It promotes all of these things that in talent we talk about all the time. That's why I started this conversation by saying that talent needs to do a better job at being a strategic partner to the business. And what I mean by that is saying things like, guys, we will find a good candidate, but we have to slow down and actually interview candidates. Or let's not just put the first person in the seat, or if it's a perfect match, put that person in the seat. Right? Like, we need to be more vocal in what we know. Some of the people I know in recruiting have been doing this for 20 and 30 years. I'm telling you, they know way more about talent than I will ever have forgotten, and can be strategic partners to organizations if the organization allows that talent department to do that. I constantly am talking about burnout and self-care and instant gratification, because the wants promotes this crazy culture, a lot of wants and no satisfaction. You're never satisfied. Never happy.
Yeah. I mean, so how do you reconcile these things? Like, say, because you were talking about data before, and like, you know, data is like outside of a persuasive, you know, person, like you're cutting through with a good message, like you're talking in a certain way that's working. And then you got like, is there good data that you use about that very idea about the advantages of slowing down and like real stepping things out so people understand it, and it's not just like, that doesn't sound like that would make sense, like slowing down can't mean more productivity, you know, that's ridiculous.
So crazy. When we go into organizations and we do what we call a diversity audit, when we go into these organizations, one of the things we look at is their attrition rate and their turnover rates, right? We ask for that data, because that data will tell me a ton about what's going on in your organization before I even talk to anybody, right? You know, if you have a very high turnover rate, something's going on, right? Mm. How many people are using your wellness programs? If you let's figure out what's happening here. Do you know how many organizations actually don't even look and analyze that data on a consistent basis, right? You know? I have instituted employee surveys. Let's do a survey and collect data about what people who are sitting in your organization actually think about this organization, right? Anonymously, right?
I'm sure that could be very confronting for some people.
Novel idea. You know what I mean? It's a novel idea. Because if I'm a CEO, I know everything about what everybody thinks about my organization. That's just not true, right? There are people at different levels that feel different ways about the organization. Now, everybody hates an employee survey. I know it. And you don't get as many back as you would like, but you do collect data points, right? And you can look at that data and say, okay, what's happening here that I got the same answer from half of the organization? Something needs to change.
Yeah.
Right? We can look at so many pieces of data. I mean, in our audit, I think we have like 300 steps to the audit of what we look at in that audit to analyze what's happening in an organization. And they're all people related. And I don't even think people know what to even look at. Very interesting.
Yeah. I mean, that would be, I can only imagine that's like a skill set in itself, because it's fine. I mean, that's a very common thing. Once again, there's sort of some striking similarities in marketing then too, because one of the great things about digital marketing these days is you can get data. So I'm always like saying to people, it's like it's not hearsay, and it, but there's still.
Right.
But then the but part of that is that then you have to have the skill and understanding to understand what the data means.
Like right.
That's absolutely. Because it's fine because there's that assumption straight away. Oh, we got data, you know, or data, whichever one you like, whichever one of those two, data or data, you know, that you would then go, oh yeah, I've got data. And like that can be a thing on its own. People going, oh, I've got great data. And they can, you know, it's like when people use terms loosely about things, they go, a good, you know, my marketing expert, you know, told me we've got good data about this, and I have no idea what that means. But that just means
right.
there's a bunch of information. But what is, you know, it's like the common thing, it's like the big thing in SEO, and it's like, you know, a lot of like X amount of people came. But the part that they came, but why you're getting a huge amount of traffic, but it's really weird because you're getting a small amount of leads. So what is that?
Right.
There's a problem there. There's like a gap, or there's this or that.
Right.
So it's even just like, you know, just being able to identify the usefulness of data or data.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's totally true. Like that's what I'm saying about the turnover rate. Like you could probably tell me in most organizations, if I go to HR, they can probably tell me what the turnover rate is.
Mm.
Right. But they don't know what to do with that number from there.
Chuck it in the bin.
Right. Like, you know, they're like, oh, our turnover rate is 36%. And I'm like, God, you're like, you know, what is happening in your organization that's happening? Why is that happening? Let's dig deeper. And unless you're able to take that, you know, that information and process it correctly and analyze it correctly and actually get some findings out at the end, that 36% number I threw out into the wind means absolutely nothing. It does you no good. Right. It doesn't do anything for you. And so this is, you know, the struggle is consistent for me. It's like, you know, in the journey of DEI, one of the big things was the numbers. You know, as long as we had a ton of Black people working with us or Asian people or whatever, at least if that number was high, we were doing good. But that number doesn't even mean anything. Again, it meant nothing. Right. And that's what we started to see, high turnover rates and total craziness happening, and then a lot of attrition happening as well. So, you know, numbers are great. I love them. I used to do it for a living for talent. Mm-hmm. I live in the numbers, but unless you actually do something with them, take actionable steps out of them, can analyze it correctly, they absolutely mean nothing. They hold no value unless you do something with them.
Yeah, I mean, I've now, like when it, say, comes to data and then the willingness of people to, you know, sort of come on board with elements of DEI and go, I'm like, say an example being that someone, yeah, assumes for whatever reason that they've had a certain demographic of workforce in their organization forever, right? And it's just, you know, it's just worked, you know, like right. in their mind, people are like, well, it's just work. Why should I change it? Like the old, is right. it ain't broke. I'm so
don't fix it. Yeah.
Yeah. Why do you fix it? So that,
right.
that idea. But the more I've, because this isn't my world either. So I don't have any reason often to, you know, to often think about it, but you know, I'm talking to you and I've spoken to a bunch of other people about it. And the more I think about it, like my perspective, like from an external person's point of view is not sort of dealing with it all the time, is that the first thing I jump to in my mind is, well, there's an assumption that demographic, whatever that is, like that other one that isn't the main part of your workforce, because stuff has just always worked, that therefore there's no extra, like even more exciting or more, you know, great potential from these like other groups of people. There's this sort of implied assumption that therefore, like you don't need to change because that's just changing for its own sake. And I mean, that's true too, right? Like people, if they just change for its own sake, and you gave that example before, people just go, I've got X amount of like Asian people, I've got X amount of like, you know, American people, I've got some white people in there, I've got a few, I mean, Puerto Ricans.
Right.
And like, people are like, cool, okay, we've got all our stuff and we're ready to go. And everyone's like, fantastic, we feel good. And we'll get a designer like Saul to do an infographic and everyone will be happy. And and they're absolutely fantastic. And then at the end of the day, it just is like, it's a bunch of numbers that, you know, don't have meaning. So then there's this untapped potential. I like, that's what I jump to in my mind is like, what are you missing out on? Like actually, what do you like to go? Oh, and I mean, there's certain established norms, like say, you know, this is a broad brush, but you know, like more, you know, male engineers overall than female engineers. Cause that's certainly like a thing here in Australia. And that's my overwhelming experience. However, I've also met heaps of, female engineers too. So, but then it becomes that thing of like, well, it's an implied thing of like, well, and you hear this argument of like, well, why would we intentionally employ, you know, other people when our information shows that the most experienced ones are males? And you can go, and that's on one hand of the argument when you position it that way, it's like, oh yeah, that's logical, but it's ignoring the fact there's untapped potential that isn't given an opportunity that could be, you know, just as good or better. You don't know. You don't know that. Right. And I mean, that to me, just from, if you're just talking about the numbers, that sounds like a lot of potential that, is not,
it's being, just being wasted.
It's not being explored. And ultimately, but the question of whether that is the case, whether is the case that there is untapped potential. I mean, may be true, may not be true, but you're never going to know unless you actually try anyway. And because you could apply exactly the same argument to painting, this is Saul logic anyway. I don't know about like what other people think, but you could apply the same logic to go, okay, well, all, men of a particular age, based on our figures, just because we've been hiring men between 20 and 25 in this particular role. Therefore, that's the evidence that is like the best workforce, but like that's completely doesn't make sense. Because it's just you don't have any other evidence to, it's like a self-unfulfilling prophecy.
Right. I can make anything make sense if I try.
Me too. I'm good at that.
You can make anything make sense if you try.
Tom Cruise comes along and like tells you something and it's like, wow, that's a really compelling argument, you know, because he's like really, cause he, jumps up on the table and he's like really, you know, sort of enthusiastic and people are like, yes, absolutely. Like there's compelling arguments can be easily, Tom Cruise is a silly example, but like But to Tom Cruise's credit, he's very enthusiastic and he does like he's good. he's like clearly good at like making people, you know, sort of like as always a movie star, I guess, but like, you know, that acting part or making people feel certain things. And that can be, and that's on the all sides of the fence, right? Like
absolutely.
That's like that's why people used to learn, logic and rhetoric back in.
Right. Back in the day. Yeah.
As the core skill. Like that was the logic, sort of logic.
I remember that.
and oratory, you know, to be able to convince. And now that's the province of like, particular people, like, you know, a barrister in a courtroom.
Yes.
Like, you know, that they're good at it. But, you know, it's a very, very interesting, area. And like, as I guess, like, we covered like a bunch of different sort of human centered things here. Hey, like we talked about, it's been very, much about people, which it should be, considering what the
in my opinion.
Yes, exactly. And, but like, how do well, actually, before I asked that, you were going to give us a quote in as well, Desiree. So, which I always ask nearing the end of the podcast with people. Sort of relates to what we're talking about, or something that you like, that you find inspirational or just good.
Yeah. So this quote is from Shirley Chisholm. She was the first Black woman on the Congress, in the United States Congress, and she represented New York. And it is, you don't make progress by standing on the sidelines, whimpering and complaining. Make progress by implementing ideas. That is mine.
Straight talker. I love it.
Yeah. Come on. Like, get it together. You have to do the work is the point, people. Goes back to my ultimate thing is that, you know, please do better for yourself, for others, and make this journey one that you are open to. To learn, to ingest, and to hear other views. I encourage people to do that a long way.
I think that's a great message. And I think now that we've talked for, you know, over an hour, I get a bit of a woo. Yeah. hour and a half ish. But like that, I get a sense that of how your delivery, would work well. Like with some of these topics, like I get, I mean, beforehand when I was reading about it, like, yeah, I get that. I mean, but now I've got firsthand experience.
Yeah, firsthand experience now. So I'm sold. Never to be forgotten.
I'm completely sold. I was already on the soul train. The soul train.
The soul train. Got it.
Soul train.
Got it.
Yeah, I was actually, funnily, as a little funny aside, I was actually watching on YouTube some of the old Soul Train. There was like a dance show, and that all sort of
came out. I know that show.
I was actually watching that thing. I was like, the couples come out, and they do their thing, and it's like so great.
This show is amazing.
I don't know. It's like one of those weird YouTube rabbit holes where things, and I wasn't even watching like any thing with like
dance in it or anything. Like, what were you watching that you got the Soul Train? I just want to know.
It's seemingly there must have been something, but it was like completely unrelated. And then it's like happy accident. I was like, Soul Train. I'm gonna watch that. So silly. I was watching unrelated stuff. Anyway, yeah, I think I was watching like squash and stuff like that because I play squash.
Soul Train comes out. Okay.
Well, it's physical. There's people moving.
Yes.
So maybe that's the relationship. Yes. But, so thank you. Like being great, Desiree. And after all this, people have been listening, where do people go online? What's the best place or places for to find out more about you?
Yeah, so LinkedIn is my happy place. I live, breathe, and even though I find it, I said so many words that I could say, but LinkedIn is pretty much where I live. Desiree Goldie on LinkedIn. I believe I'm the only one. And, you know, you can also go to my consulting website, which is dobetterconsulting.net. And then if you have this work that you want to be done, from a diversity perspective for your organization, not as an individual, You can reach me at zrdpartners.com and look up the website and ask to speak with me. So that's kind of all the places, but the easiest place to get me is to DM me on LinkedIn.
Yeah, I see. I do see that you're fairly active on LinkedIn and you got lots of, and you use lots of nice little emojis and stuff that stands out.
Yeah, they're so annoying.
Yeah, but look, hey, they stand out and they do actually grab your eye, like them or not like them, but they do actually catch your eye. So I assume that's part of the intent behind them, and it works.
Yeah,
like,
and it doesn't work.
And it's not just because I'm a designer and I like to look at things. It's because I'm a person too.
You're a human.
I'm a human, just like everybody listening. Okay, just remember that, everyone. Okay, so thanks again, and we'll, as a parting note, say goodbye to everyone, Desiree.
Goodbye, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. It was a joy to be here. Thank you so much for having me. This has been so much fun. I didn't think I would have so much to talk about, but I did. So thank you. I enjoyed it greatly.
You didn't think that you could go for 2 hours, and we didn't go for 2 hours. But it wasn't too far, so there you go.
Yeah. There you go. Thank you so much.
Thanks, everyone. See you later.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode of Grow Your Business. Have a great day, and we'll see you next time here at the Grow Your Business podcast.